You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And we are live streaming right now here on the couch on LA Talk Radio, as we always are on Tuesdays at 12 noon Pacific time. Welcome, everybody, wherever you're at around the world. I'm Dr. Michelle Cohen, and welcome to the couch here on LA Talk Radio. I've got a wonderful guest today. You can probably see him sharing the screen with me right now. I'm sure many of my listeners have already read a lot of your books, Michael, because that's just what they do, is they read a lot of really cool, informative, self-help, spiritual books. But today we're talking about my special guest, Michael Goddard's new book, and it's called A New Now. And it's your guide to mastering wisdom daily, achieving equilibrium, and empowering your nobler self. So we're going to find out what our nobler selves are and what that means to us and how we can do all those things. So let me show you the book right now. Try to get the glare off, as I always do, from all my lighting here. It's A New Now, beautiful book. Easy, great read, though, informative. And, there are some little journaling tools in there for you to help yourself out. And it's a time now, I think, for everyone. Well, it has been coming since quite a long time, but this is our awakening. I mean, it seems like since, COVID really started flowing through the world last year, it was really awakening everyone to what is going on. We all, had that fear instinct that popped up, and what are we going to do for survival? And I think this has led to a much higher evolution of thinking on a more spiritual sense. And how can we improve our lives given, some of the problems that we're having? People are passing. It's a tough, scary time. It still is. And so now we have to become higher selves for us and try to get together and as much as we can and just come together as a higher consciousness world, in my opinion. And I thank you so much, Michael, for this book. It's really a good read. So,
you're most welcome, Dr. Michelle, and thank you for that really perfect introduction.
It was great. You're welcome
to the discussion. Well, yeah, I finished the book actually right when COVID broke in March of 2020.
Wow.
And
wow.
I'd been in this wonderful bubble for 13 months writing it. And then, and I thought, it'd be nice if it were published now, but COVID's still going on.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. So a lot of things were shut down then. So it's a little difficult, but right. I hear what you're saying. And, it's so interesting to me because I was reading about your background and everything, my gosh, everything you've done to get to where you are now in your conscious journey. And you've been studying spirituality for over 30 years and really going with some of the masters and learning, to be the evolved soul that you are right now in this lifetime for yourself. Can you talk about how your spiritual quest began?
Well, sure. Yeah, it actually began when we arrived in California. We were living in America's first perfectly planned community outside of Chicago called Park Forest. They called it a sociologist's playground. They were peeping into windows. taking notes. Anyway, we arrived. We went over the Golden Gate to Marin County, and my mother said, "That's it, we're living here." And and weeks after, and she's an artist, and she started showing in galleries throughout the Bay Area. And shortly after we moved into Bel Air, I started trying to contact the spirit world and do automatic writing. Somewhere I found a book on self-hypnosis. So I was doing that. I was trying to contact, these spirit entities. So, but it really began right after my 11th birthday, after we had moved a little north so we could put in a swimming pool where it was warmer. And I've been raising tropical fish since I was five. So I was very aware of death because every few weeks or so a fish would die. I'd have to catch
it. Oh, yeah.
Flush it down the toilet with a net. And there goes another one of my good friends.
Aww.
So it was sad. So, I was very aware that I was going to die. And I just like was looking to the mirror out of the blue, trying to open my third eye. I don't know where that came from, but now I do, having recovered actually many of my past lives. And I just formed this conviction that I was going to dedicate my life to solving the answer to life and death and trying to achieve a consciousness of absolute bliss. It sounds really audacious and truculent, but that's what I came to, you know, at the age of 11. Since I've been 8, I've been praying secretly to God. My parents were not religious, really just thanking him for everything he'd been given. So because my mother was an artist, we went into San Francisco a lot to the galleries, which I really enjoyed. And after 20, 30 minutes, I'd ask her if I could slip away. And she said yes. And there was a metaphysical bookshop on Sutter Street that I went to. And I just felt intuitively, there's a book that's going to answer everything for me. And I pulled down book after book, and it wasn't it. But when I was 12, I was reading Edgar Cayce.
Right.
And as soon as I came across the word reincarnation, I thought, wow, that's true. I knew it to be true. So I continued to search throughout high school. I began meditating with a well-known meditation when I was 19 because I was going abroad. And when I was 19 in England, that was sort of my dark night of the soul. It's like, when am I going to find what I'm supposed to find? I can't take anymore. I was really going through this existential pain. And I've been searching with a friend throughout high school. As it happened, I was too far away from the high school to take a bus back. So I would spend the night over there after we had these discussions. So we were consciously searching for the path. By the time I went to England, we had figured out meditation was like the most important part of it, and also being a vegetarian. And when I came back from England early, because I wanted to spend the summer in Greece writing a novel I started, but something ineluctably pulled me back. And as soon as I had an apartment in Berkeley, a week later he called. He was on his way with his new wife to India. He came in and I knew he'd found what I'd been looking for. So I was initiated at age 21, and I agreed to meditate for at least 2.5 hours a day. But in addition to that, since I've been in high school, throughout all the decades of my life, I've been working on my intuition, you know, first with tarot, dowsing, muscle testing for a while. But it became of paramount importance when I almost died several times when my intestine died in 2012.
Oh, my God.
And I was unconscious for a few days. And they finally did exploratory surgery. They held my hand to sign off on all the forms.
Wow.
And they found that a third of my intestine had died. So that was like major, major surgery. The recovery I can't describe. But 2 months later, I started to develop bowel obstructions, which were, I can't describe or think of anything more painful. So the reason I'm relating all this, Dr. Michelle, is that I had to intuit every spoonful of food, every tortilla chip I would eat, so I wouldn't overeat or eat the wrong things and get another bowel obstruction and have to go to the ER. Living in the ER in the hospital for months. So finally I had more major surgery, which I had developed perfuse scar adhesions, and they removed as much as they could. But I'm still recovering. I was a bodybuilder for decades, and I lost 40 pounds of muscle mass.
Oh, which, my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, I was really well built, and I haven't gained it back yet. I'm at a really low weight, which is okay. But all this time, through all this, I'm using my intuition every day. So what's always been of interest to me is how to live the best life possible. I was really lucky. I had found the path I was searching for. However, a lot of people who came on to my spiritual path, our path, in their 40s or 50s, they said, why did you come in at such an early age? Well, I've been actively seeking consciously for 3 lifetimes before that. And this is all related in precise, exact detail in my last book, In Search of Lost Lives. It's my spiritual memoir in which I recover 88 past lives. And that is just chock full of exact details of who I was, the actual years I was born and died. So if you believe in reincarnation, if you think it's totally woo-woo, airy-fairy, this is a book that could open you up and change your mind.
Yes. Yeah.
So I was really, thank you. Yeah. So I was really kind of tired of writing articles and revising them. I'm basically a writer. My main profession in life was I had a tax practice for very involved tax returns. And I would keep the writing alive, you know, writing 15 to 20 minutes a day. But I finally left the tax world a few years ago. And I've been writing all these interview Q&As and articles. I wanted to write something new. So I just asked my higher consciousness if there was a new book I could write.
Wow.
Literally, it came through word by word.
Wow.
The first word to come through was wisdom. The working title was originally Mastering Wisdom Daily. And then very quickly, the working subtitle came through, 10 Keys to Achieving Equilibrium.
Wow.
So that was my working title. And finally, I just took off for Florida to see if I had a book. I'd been taking notes. And I started revising it. And I thought, yes, there is a book here. And when I started to write it, right away a new now came through.
Ah.
And that I knew intuitively that was the title. So,
right.
So this is the book. While I was working on these notes in Florida, I happened to be eating dinner in a vegetarian restaurant. And it was just me and this cute, cute young couple, 20 years old. And they were eating, but most of the time they were taking pictures of what they were eating and posting it. And it hit me, you know, what if they were my twin children and I was in my 40s and dying of pancreatic cancer quickly, which my mother did, actually. What would I want to leave them with? And it just hit me. I would want to leave them with this book.
Wow.
So this is
interesting.
And that really, really gelled everything for me. So that really was some of the rocket fuel. But it's also for, like, if I had a sister who had spent her life raising her family and working and just never having a moment to herself, let alone to explore her spiritual evolution, this is the book I would want to give her.
Right.
But now you have the time to really serve yourself, your higher self.
Right.
So this is really a very self-participatory, experiential book that can become a lifetime companion.
Oh, yeah. I think it's wonderful the way you walk through, you know, the wisdoms, you know, you have all these loving wisdoms that you share. And so we'll talk about some of those wisdoms and what's so important, you think, to help people to evolve, you know, in their higher consciousness. I'd also like to talk about, you know, some of the past, the past life stuff as well, because, I mean, that's, you know, people start to hear that as you said, and people go, woo-woo, here we go, get ready for this. But I mean, I've read a lot of Dolores Cannon's books, you know, and done a lot of research on that. And of course, every sort of person that's come out in the media who's had near death experiences or had been past life regressed, you know, in a hypnosis session, people who have pretty much, I have a girlfriend who's a therapist in the Midwest, and she actually was pronounced dead. She said, I was almost toe tagged. And she went on an amazing journey while her brain stopped and her heart, everything shut down, and describes it as most people do. So she said, you know, there is an afterlife, but she wasn't given the information. She was given a lot of information, but that she had been here before and had to accomplish things, except for the fact that they said to her, you're not ready yet. You've got to come back down and finish what you came here to do. So, you know, I'd like to talk about that as well and get back to your book as well. But do we keep in your, first of all, let me ask you this. I want to get the cart before the horse here. Do you get to tell people about things you've learned when you come back down here again? I mean, do we have to keep coming back down here to learn lessons so we can be higher conscious beings? or do we choose to come back here? Or how did you perceive that in your journeys?
Yeah, I can only really talk about my own experience, and I access my past lives well in a variety of ways. A lot of the information just flowed through automatically. I had all kinds of triggers that kind of brought me back to the past life. And also I was doing an intuitive assessing to get all the details. But so we're all on a spiritual journey. I mean, I always quote the quote attributed to Teilhard de Chardin, we are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. So I can really only talk about myself and my cohort of seven. And that was the seven other mind spirit entities. I was mainly with between lives. It was like we were like a spiritual pod, learning together, learning from our lives. So basically, the law of creation is action and reaction. A lot of people in the West don't like the word karma. I mean, people use karma it's for everything. Well, basically, everything is karma. I mean, everything is happening through karma. But because of all our actions, creating reactions, both good and bad, we've accumulated, I say, Himalayan mountains of karma. And our destiny is formed from all that sentient karma. Sentient is a Sanskrit word for reserve. So reserve of past actions. So we each come here with a destiny. And I don't know if I'm answering your question, but
yeah.
I didn't get that I chose to come down. I didn't really look into that question. I know people have done past life regressions. That's more of a discussed topic.
Right.
But what I can say for myself, Dr. Michelle, is that each life I had, and I think this is true for everyone, each life had a definite spiritual purpose.
Okay.
Now, I identify the spiritual purpose of many lives in my book. In fact, I've even thought of writing a book just on that topic. And sometimes I was aware of it, other times I'm not. So in the book Anew Now, I take the reader through a series of questions. And a lot of it is to help you find your spiritual purpose, but also your worldly purpose.
Yes.
A lot of people, I think, are unfortunately caught up on the word calling. They think they have to have a calling.
Right.
Like every person that seems has become famous overnight starts a foundation in their name to do good, which is fine. That may be their calling. But I think a lot of people are feeling bad that, oh, I don't have a calling. Well, one thing I want to say, and I differentiate between calling and a spiritual purpose in my book,
right,
is that you don't necessarily have a calling. I do think people have particular geniuses, and I talk about that in the Wisdom of Commonality.
Right.
And you may have be a genius for being a good listener, for helping children, for being a teacher. And I encourage people to really, you know, be in touch with what they really love doing and what gave them a charge. Because when I was looking into changing professions, I was working in a corporate tax department. I was very good at it, but it really wasn't my passion. And I went to a career counselor on the side. And one of the things he asked me, I mean, what gave you the greatest kind of fulfillment and satisfaction and gratitude? And I was writing an article that was published on the visit of a saint to a community. And I got feedback on that for years and years of how much people enjoyed that short article.
Wow, that's wonderful. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the whole point of Anew Now is to empower people to make best use of your life.
Beautiful.
So many of us just are hung up on what we're hung up on, whether it's news cycles, gang, 5 to 10 different shows you're watching, work.
Yeah.
The thing is, as we learned so graphically recently, people you loved who you thought would be in your life for 5 more years, 30 more years, were taken. Their time was up. And I can state that our breaths are numbered. I mean, brothers go to war together in a battlefield, and they may all charge at the same time, like in World War I. And one brother will be killed instantly, another will be maimed for life, and another may escape battles of bullets altogether. So each of us has a very individual karmic destiny, which is to be filled. We're all going to be taken at the time we're supposed to. I mean, some people in the worst health live on and on and on. And my wonderful, fabulous optician, picture of health, he had a fatal heart attack at age 49, leaving these young children and a wife. So who thought he, you know, he was very fit, who thought he'd have a heart attack? So your human life, I make the point at the very beginning of writing, this is your most precious gift. Make best use of it. Don't waste it.
You know. Exactly. And you know, I think you're so right on that particular point of view. And we're going to talk about how people can make the best out of it with some of your wonderful information that you share in your book. Here it is, guys. A New Now. Right. Michael Goddard, you've got to pick it up. Great reading. And it's really helps. It says your guide to mastering wisdom daily, achieving wisdom daily, achieving equilibrium, and empowering your nobler self. So, you know, and a lot of people look at, you know, when you say the word karma, they look at it like, oh, I'm being punished for something. But that's not the reality. It's almost like the karma is, this is your journey and this is your life's lesson that you are dealing with now in this particular embodiment, perhaps. Is that the way you're putting it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's, you can very simply good karma and bad karma. I mean, as I tell people, if you pick your nose, that's karma. I mean, everything is karma. So it's almost not worth talking about it, except to the extent that you also really want to be a good human being. That is so important.
That's it.
And to be kind and loving and not judge, because people do things they have no control over. You don't know their entire history.
I mean,
you don't know what's gone before. One of the things that I feel is really illuminating about my spiritual memoir, Dr. Michelle, is that at the beginning of the book, before I get into the lives, which is the main part of the book, I talk about really unusual quirks and talents and interests of myself when I was a child, a preteen, and a teenager.
And I
have these two lists. And then later on, those are linked to specific experiences from particular past lives. So why at the age of 7, out of the blue, did I start designing floor plans for dream homes and drawing elevations? I mean, by the time we moved to California, I had a whole portfolio of architectural plans that came out of nowhere. My parents had nothing to do with it, nor any relatives. Well, I sent those in. Frank Lloyd Wright, you know, is one of our most famous architects, had an office in San Francisco. I sent in my portfolio just to hear what he, maybe if he answered me, what he thought of it. He called me and the head architect, Aaron Green, for an interview. He was completely impressed. He said, when you finish high school, I want you to come back. You have a job here.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is wonderful. And I quickly lost interest in architecture after that. And the reason I'm relating this is that three lives ago in post-American Revolution Baltimore, I was an architect struggling to support a family of four kids, you know, a wife. My parents were immigrants. I had been born in the U.S. And all I had were commercial commissions. I never got to design homes. So this desire built in me. I wanted to design a dream home, which I never had the chance to, because I was just scrambling for work, trying to make ends meet. So if you desire something long enough and strong enough, it like creates a groove in the mind. And what I say, it congeals into a karma. So
interesting.
So I came in with this karma. This was allotted to this life, that I would get to fulfill this desire of designing dream residential homes. And this was a sanskara, which is in the subtitle of my memoir. A sanskara is a Sanskrit word meaning past impression. So I had this very powerful sanskara, this past impression of doing architecture. I mean, why do kids who are age 5 start composing symphonies? They don't, their parents don't give them a crash course in music. Maybe Either they may have had, maybe they had a good environment with a musical family, but others didn't. Mm. You know, we come in with all these things that we can't explain. But what I want to tell people is that everything makes sense. Everything can be explained. However, we're laboring under this cloud of unknowing. Most of us are not meant to know what our past lives are. We're just meant to do our best and move as far as possible toward God or whatever you want to call the ultimate source of being.
Oh, fascinating. What a 88 lives. Oh, my goodness. I mean, I want to get back into your book in just a minute, but I'm so fascinated with this. How did you get into that state of getting in touch with those lives? Were you in deep meditation? Were you in a dream state? Were you hypnotized? How was that?
It was really varied, Dr. Michelle. I mean, a lot of the most interesting aspects of lives came through automatically when I'd hear a piece of music, when I see a movie, a trailer. I had some waking visions of me being with another person in the past life. But I would mainly kind of interrupt. It was basically a dialogue between my everyday consciousness and my higher consciousness. And then if I was having trouble getting a detail, because, I mean, I list, like, all my parents' professions, my profession, all kinds of physical details. I really wanted to ground it in the nitty-gritty. Typically in one life, I might have trouble with one detail. Often it was something really subtle, like if I had what I call a key evolutionary spiritual experience. These were very subtle and spiritual. If I'd have trouble getting it, I would meditate for a while and it would come through.
Wow, that's so interesting. Yeah. So you've gotten yourself, you know, you said that you are always in a here and now or an awakened state 24/7, and that's because of all the work you've done.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I would say that I try to live as consciously as possible in a new now. The way I live now is very different from 10 years ago before I had my surgery. But I've been on this long, long trajectory of heightening my consciousness.
That's beautiful.
And the book A New Now can help you and supercharge your journey to living, creating your new now, so you get to know what next.
Right.
And how to be your best self.
Exactly. And you can ask yourself these questions, you know, in the book. And you talk about 11 loving wisdoms that you share. So I'd like to talk about some of those. So you talk about these wisdoms to help people really understand the importance of certain things. These are wise things we need to think about and why in our lives. So you talk about the wisdom of humane interactions, right? Mm-hmm. So what is so important about that in our awareness of those interactions?
Well, we all contain the spark of God within us. That is our soul. It's a drop or a spark of the divine. It's the essence of pure love. That is who we really are. And every being has a spark, even if it's a creature of lower consciousness. Yeah. And we cannot even, we should never begin to judge what someone is going through. I mean, if somebody cuts you off in traffic or jams into your shopping cart, you know, there's like endemic unconsciousness in a way in the world, but it's all perfect because we're all struggling souls. Once we become perfect, we no longer need to come here.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Those rare human beings who are perfect, those are the fully realized souls that are called perfect masters, saints, mystic adepts. But we're all struggling toward that perfection. We're here really for God realization, ultimately.
Oh, okay.
So humane interactions is really being your loving kind of self to people, really never going for the jugular, having compassion.
Right.
And really, studies have shown that this really helps your longevity.
Yes,
Human interaction, I mean, people, you know, in really close-knit loving communities, a lot of the blue zones where people live well into their hundreds, they have a lot of human interaction. But I call it the wisdom humane interaction. It's really being human beings who are actually spiritual beings. So that's actually the first
Wow, yes. Wisdom. Beautiful. That's beautiful. It, you know, it is. It really is. And so important, you know, being raised, a little transparency here myself. In my family, we weren't raised real religious per se. Mm-hmm. But my mom was more the leader of the wisdom or what we need to do in our lives. And she would say to me, the most important thing in the world, this is my religion that I'm teaching you, is to be kind and loving, try to be as non-judgmental, and have empathy and compassion for others. That's, if you can get that, you got it down. If you can have compassion and hold yourself from judging and try to live in other people and see through their eyes, that's her religion that she taught me. So I really think that what you're saying, that's exactly what it's all about, is the wisdom of humane interactions and love. Why is it so important to have the wisdom of acceptance, which you write about in your book?
Oh, because if you're not accepting something, you're resisting reality and you're stuck.
Right.
What you resist persists in your life. So you're not moving forward. You're stuck. Mm-hmm. So everybody can go into judgment really easy when something happens, something doesn't happen according to their wishes. So one of my favorite sayings is simply, do your best and leave the rest.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, give everything your best effort, but leave the results to, you know, the goddess, God, whatever you want to call, you know, your any higher consciousness, really. So acceptance is very important, and it's accepting where you are. I mean, going back to your wonderful comment about your mother, well, you know, you may be daily trying to do your best to be kind and loving and judgmental.
Trying.
Yeah. But somebody at work or at school may be just really acting out and driving you crazy. Yeah. And you may let loose with an unkind remark to put them in their place. Well, don't judge yourself. Accept that you're, you know, from time to time, you won't be the best self you can be. So it's also about having compassion for yourself and accepting the fact that you're a struggling soul. I mean, some people who get initiated on a spiritual path, you know, they meditate and meditate for hours and hours, and then they feel they don't get anywhere and they don't accept that. And then they throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Right.
That's a really important point in my
book. Right.
Whatever spiritual path or practice you're following, don't expect results. This has to do with the wisdom of acceptance. Just accept where you are, because the results aren't up to you. The effort and the best intention are up to you, and the perseverance. And those are wisdoms I write about in the 11 evolutionary wisdoms.
Oh, wow. That's beautiful. You talk about the wisdom of being true to yourself as well. And like, I guess that's what you said earlier, is to just find out who you are, find out more about what your passions are, and perhaps embrace those things. There's so many people I work with, you know, a lot of patients say to me, I don't really know who I am because of social media, or of who I told I was by my parents, or, you know, how I judge who I am in the world by my status or my economic status or whatever that is. And so how can we be more true to ourselves?
Well, we can let go of all these unnecessary labels and categories that we take on and impose on ourselves. I'm the kind, when in my 20s, I had such toxic self-esteem, before I'd make a decision, I'd ask 6 friends what they thought and try to go with the consensus. Well, you know, it's been really years since I've had it, and years since I've had to ask anyone's opinion, because I've turned that around, and I'm really have occupied myself. I've come into my own, and everybody has that power. You just really need to have faith in yourself. You have all the wisdom and power within you. I write early on in the book about wisdom. Each of us has what I call an inverted well of wisdom within us. It's just a matter of learning how to access it. And that's our higher sense of knowing. That is our really coming into our nobler self. So being true to yourself is really getting in touch and empowering your higher mind, your better mind, your nobler mind, and not letting yourself be ruled all the time by your lower mind, which is the part of you that just wants to give in to whatever sensual delight captivates you.
Yeah.
So it's really gaining a true independence.
Right.
We want to be liberated from all these external influences that are keeping us from being true to ourselves. And that is
it's not
closing yourself off from the world. I mean, like with COVID, I think it was important for people to do as much research as they were pulled to, but use your discrimination to discern as best as you can, as you could, what is true and what was not true.
Exactly. So important. And how can we learn, you talk about in the wisdom of love? How can we learn to live more in the wisdom of loving all the time?
That's a really a profound and wonderful question. I would say, you know, first we have to find it for ourselves, but it's very important what you take in terms of what you read, what you watch, but really to acknowledge as well as you can, even though you don't feel it, that the true you, the perfect you, is a pure, loving being, and everyone else has that. So if you become God-realized and you're still on Earth or close to it, you're able to see everybody really as an emanation of that divine love.
Yes, exactly.
It's really an acceptance that ultimately love is all there is. This Earth plane, you know, does not last into eternity, but we will keep going on because we have a soul. We are necessarily associated with the mind and a body because otherwise we couldn't function on the physical plane. But ultimately, the true reality is love, which has no name, which cannot be described. It's this continual upsurging eternal ocean of bliss. You can't describe it. That is really our true home. It's where we came from, and each of us can go back. We're meant to if we honor that and we
right. And that's I've had a lot of people who, you know, are in the media and have written wonderful books, but who are also well-known spiritual leaders. Talk about universal consciousness in those meditations where we just go into the whatever you want to call it, the God space or quantum field or quantum consciousness or whatever that is. That's just connecting and losing our egos and really realizing that we are all one and everything, the glue of everything is love, the glue of connectedness, the glue of even physical objects, everything is a love consciousness.
Right. And in one of my books, my first book, Spiritual Revolution, which is a distillation of the teachings of all saints and mystics and perfect masters, I talk about the audible God's dream. That's a term I coined, which is also the Holy Ghost, the Word of the Bible, the Logos. It's all the same thing. I mean, it's infused throughout our bodies and everything. In us, it's active because it's we're alive. It's what animates us. So that is really the profound substance of creation. So
exactly. That's beautiful. Beautifully said. You also talk about in your book, The New Now. Here you go, guys. Here it is. There you are. you talk about the five sources of wisdom. So where do we get all of our wisdom from? And we really have to work on and look at the five sources, which are clear-headedness, inspiration, intuition, forgiveness. And that includes self-forgiveness, you know, not hanging on, and also listening. In other words, being aware and being present, I guess, right?
Right. And listening actually has five facets or aspects. It's like listening also like includes reading, listening to the wise words of other people. And, you know, listening in nature, for instance, but also you can learn to listen to inner sound. And I think more people are just hearing this automatically. There's a raising level of consciousness. So a true source of wisdom is listening to the audible God current. But clear-headedness is a very practical section for people because I take people through different examples and questions of how to address different issues, whether it's device slavery or overeating. You know, it's been kind of a a spiritual and kind of airy-fairy discussion, but I want to emphasize that Anunnaw is really a very practical book for navigating all
aspects
of everyday life. And I kind of try to cover all bases in the book. But the five sources of wisdom are for people to help you become aware of how you can become better aware.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. And also something else is being aware of being aware. You know, that's part of the meditation that I use. Can you comment on that at all?
Right. Well, actually, that there's a line repeated two or three times in the book at the appropriate place. Be aware of being aware.
Right. Exactly.
And from there, you can access your wisdom.
Right.
Ideally, in the state of equilibrium. Mm-hmm. And I give the 10 keys for achieving equilibrium. And equilibrium is basically a state of dynamic balance where you're at your spiritual center, where you're most present, positive, centered, grounded, at peace.
Yes.
I list a lot of attributes of being at your spiritual center.
Right, exactly.
And ways to really learn and what your spiritual center is, but also importantly, how to return to your spiritual center.
Oh, that's beautiful too. Yes. And you talk about the wisdom of faith, sages, intention, service, humility, practice, perseverance, and of course, seeking God. And that's God within as well. And connecting with that.
And that is the last evolutionary wisdom I write about in the ultimate wisdom of seeking God. And that truly is making best use of your life. And if the word God doesn't resonate with you, that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, sure, sure.
That power has no name. Of name.
Yes, right.
Use whatever name you want. In the book, I use the word I've used before, love source, with the L and the S capitalized as one word. I call God love source, just because it's a neutral but beautiful term to use.
Yeah, it is beautiful, you know, and we all have our own way, you know, of connecting with that, of course. So you talk also about higher mind, better mind, and nobler mind. So what do you mean by all three of those?
Well, there are really three ways of describing the same thing. It's really our mind is a vast sphere of activity, neutral, positive, and negative. And the majority of people are dominated by their lower minds. That's why there's so much strife and conflict in the world, why people are really often just doing things that don't serve them and others. But our higher mind, and I write a lot about this in my memoir, Search of Lost Lives, is really what is the true ally of your soul. It's the part of you that wants to be good, that wants to be of service, that wants to be kind and loving. It's the part of you that ideally you want to make predominant. It's the part of you that will look into yoga or meditation and be helpful to people. And it's the mind that wants you to become a better human being. I had a very spiritual friend, very evolved, but she had this vicious habit of backbiting and gossip. And it was just a very deep groove in her mind. And I try to get her to stop gossiping about mutual friends, which I hated to hear about, and strangers I didn't want to hear about.
Sure, sure.
But she would let her lower mind take over in those times.
Right.
You know, the rest of the time, she was really sweet and loving, but she was a gossip. And she knew it, but she couldn't help it. So, you know, there are things to do. It's really gaining an awareness of yourself and how you're behaving in the world.
Yeah, exactly. And was she willing to listen to people who said to her, you know, I'm just not into this and it's not serving me?
No, as far as I know, she wasn't. I mean, unfortunately, I had to let go of the relationship when she badmouthed her children and her best friend, who is one of my best friends, and she just would not listen. And I wish her well. And you know, she's struggling herself. I don't know, obviously, what she'd gone through her whole life.
Right.
I know a lot of her history, but sometimes you just have to let go and move on.
Sure, exactly.
Coming into your better self is often a big process of letting go. it can be painful. It can also feel liberating and joyful.
Right. And it sure can, you know. Yeah. And I think a lot of, you know, in psychology work, what we do is we try to have people becoming aware of how they're coming off or their thoughts. And, you know, thoughts and actions and words are so powerful because we're constantly manifesting what we're thinking and, you know, saying and, you know, what we're putting energy towards. So, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, sometimes we do have to give up relationships that and draw boundaries with people who might not be in our energy vibe or something. And I'm not saying, yo, we're better than they are, or, you know, we're more higher developed. And that's not what you're saying at all in this book. And there's no judgment. Like you said, everyone has their own journey and their own lessons and karma that they need to learn. But, you know, sometimes, you know, people don't get it after years. They just don't.
Exactly. After years, some people don't get it, and you just have to move on. And nobody's going to stay with us for eternity. I mean, this cohort of seven I read about, you know, the beings I was with between lives when we reviewed lives and did spiritual work for coming back. Well, that group is being split up. Four of us are not going to be with that cohort anymore. I don't know what will happen. And by the way, I've known all of them in this lifetime and two lives ago, which was really, really thrilling review to know, because I first learned about my cohort of seven when I was on vacation in Hawaii, and two or three of them came to me right away, but the rest didn't. But I finally discovered who they were. I couldn't remember, but I went through an old address book. And so I knew it was a very unusual thing. I mean, these are the mind and souls I incarnated with the most on Earth, way more than other people. I mean, we were all kinds of relations and whatnot.
And so, how, Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead. I could talk for ages on
how do we identify those souls? How do we identify those people who were?
Well, you have like an instant profound connection when, you know, I mean, three of them I couldn't identify, and I literally had to go through my old database that I presciently had printed out because it was a DOS program, you know, from the early 90s. And I literally had to go through the name. And when I would land on a name, I thought, ah, that's him. That's him. And it would all fall in place. And I would remember our first meeting. I would feel like my higher mind was trying to jump into that person. Saying, hi, we're here, we're back, how are you, what's going on? And so it became really clear that this person was part of my cohort and so dear to me. And actually, all the ones I brought it up to, they acknowledged it. They said, I knew there was something really different about our connection.
Yeah, fascinating. Real quick question. Do we have to keep coming back with people in our families to resolve unresolved issues?
We may. It's all individual, just real quickly. All the members of my nuclear family, it was my first life with them. And that's a partial explanation of why it was such a tough, tough, tough family to live in.
Right.
Completely discordant for me and my energy.
Wow. Right.
But before we run out of time, I want to let listeners know how they can contact me and download. I have a journey journal you can easily download and work with on the book. And all you need to do to read excerpts and hear more interviews, go to my website, Goddart.com. That's G-O-D-D-A-R-T, T for Tom, Goddart.com. And under free media, there are things you can download, the Journey Journal and excerpts. And from there, you can actually click onto Amazon if that's where you happen to find
it. Beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that information. And also on Michael's website, you can find out about his first published book, Spiritual Revolution, A Seeker's Guide, 52 Powerful Principles for Your Mind and Soul. You can also check out the book Bliss and In Search of Lost Lives. And of course, we're talking about his new book. It's called A New Now. And it's really your guide to mastering wisdom daily, achieving equilibrium, and empowering your nobler self. So thank you so much for being on the couch today, Michael. It's such a great interview. So nice to meet you.
Oh, so wonderful to meet you, Dr. Michelle. I loved everything you've said, and I look forward to an ongoing conversation. Thank you.
All right. Take good care. Namaste, my dear.
Namaste.
Thanks.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.